Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Mary Izette.
From Fomentabouty. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Hey, it's Tuesday, September 6th, 2016. I got Justin Kennedy here with me.
Hey, what's up, Jimmy?
James Ty and Tony Ford will be joining us, and it's our first live show of the fall season. So on that note, thanks to our sponsors, Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers, and Maggie's out there tweeting live at beer_sessions. So, Justin, how was your summer, man?
It was great. We took a long time off here at Beer Sessions, and I drank a lot of beer in that meantime.
we had a lot of pre-records to catch up on. We did our On the Road series. Here's Tony Ford, too, from Ale Street News.
Hey, they both walked in right at the right time.
Everybody. Meanwhile, Justin and I have been drinking Hill Farmstead, you know, one of their pale ales, and some Against the Grain. But, yeah, Justin, tell me more about your summer. So you get around a lot. I mean, you're doing Steal This Beer.
Yeah, I went out to Chicago for a weekend. Went out to Columbus, Ohio recently. And just about 2 weeks ago, I was in Richmond, Virginia for an IPA festival at a new brewery called The Vale Brewing. And that was a lot of fun. There was some guys from Brooklyn there, Other Half and Threes, and a lot of other really great brewers from all up and down the East Coast.
That's great, man. Yeah. One thing I want to talk about this show was, you know, for a while I was a critic of just, you know, the trend of session IPAs that even in your notes you said, you know, tastes like hoppy water.
Sure, yeah.
But I have noticed in the last year there's a lot more, like, really good pale ales that have a hoppiness to them. Like, Barrier makes fantastical XPA, and recently, like, you know, Industrial Arts, Jeff O'Neill's new brewery, their first beer out is Tools of the Trade, a hoppy pale ale. You know, so what do you think about, you know, summer, you know, session IPAs versus, you know, like a hoppy pale ale?
Yeah, I think there's a difference to be drawn for sure. The idea of session IPA came around a few years ago, and it just really exploded. I think the reason for that is that it has IPA in the name. And, you know, pale ale for a long time was a little bit of a ho-hum drink for beer drinkers. We had, you know, of course, Sierra Nevada's pale ale is a great one, but I don't think anyone considers it, you know, a session IPA, but, you know, it's kind of an old school pale ale. And then session IPA came, and it just, you know, people thought it's got all the same hop character, but you can drink, you know, five of them and not feel like shit. So it was, yeah, it became really popular, and it's still really, really popular. I think there are 170, 160 different entries last year at GABF. So it's obviously a really, really popular category, and I think it's going to continue to be. I don't think we're going to see it dying off at all.
You know, and Tony and James Ty, welcome to the show, too.
Yeah, I mean, hi, everyone.
How do you differentiate between a session IPA and a pale ale? I mean,
well, I think session means different things in different cultures. So session really kind of came from British Isles, where I also come from, as a matter of fact, and I did bring a sample. I was just back for the Great British Beer Festival. So I think, you know, the session IPAs were probably a reaction to a lot of really strong double IPAs and that kind of thing. And obviously the American palate really got into the hops and loves the hops. So the session IPA is a way to, you know, present the hops, but take out some of the higher alcohols. And I think, you know, where I grew up, session was, it means you can drink a lot of it. The traditional British beer is cask conditioned, so it's less carbonated, and you can just drink a lot of volume, and it's just easier on the stomach.
Is that because it's less filling, Tony, or what's the...
Well, know, it's like it is lower alcohol. That's kind of where obviously the session came from.
But I mean, less carbonation too. So
yeah, it's just you know, it's less gas going into your belly, right, so right. It goes down easier. I mean, that's what's been.
Yeah, I know. I know the problem.
Been my theory. They drink imperial pints over there for 20 ounces versus 16, and they really a session means quite a few beers. Whereas here, you know, a session can be, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever. Obviously, a little bit more with the session IPAs.
It's nice having you on the show again, Tony.
All right. It's great to be here. Public transport, of course, made it a little nip and tuck, but I made it.
It was exciting. We were starting the show. Justin sat down, and we popped a beer, and you guys walked in. Love that.
Perfect timing.
What's going on with you for fall, Tony? I know you've got... something, some beer trips or
yeah, we got happenings. We've got the Ale Street trip to the Great American Beer Festival that we do every year. We still have some spots if anyone's interested. We can still fit you in. Just go to our website. So that's coming up this year. It's October 6th to 9th, so it's beginning of October. And then I have a quick turnaround after that because on the 10th, I'm flying to Rio for the Mundial de la Beer Festival down in Brazil, which I work with those folks at the Mondale.
That's great. And we'll talk more about that. And James Ty, welcome back, man. Beer Acolyte at Beer Acolyte.
What's up? Yes.
Beer Consultant, everything.
Yep.
Uber Cicerone. That's a new category, you know, Uber Cicerone. Uber
that's
Cicerone.
New to me. Wow, but I'll take it. I will gladly take
that's
that.
That's above the master, I guess.
You've been traveling to different tastings and beer festivals.
Yeah, and just somewhat germane to, I guess, our discussion today, our topic. I just got back from the Yakima Valley in Washington. You know, I just visited a few hop farms, you know, and got to see what was going on there, you know, right during harvest. So that was really fun.
Yeah, it seems a lot of people have been heading out there this year. I was talking to some brewers that were
absolutely
out there.
Yeah.
Keeps yeah, talking hops. But then that's why I was thinking today was like, you know, I feel beyond session IPA because, like I said, I noticed a couple years ago that there were more of these called session IPAs coming out, and maybe they're hoppy, citrusy water to me. But I feel like now there are these really great pale ales that are kind of representing the new, like, use of hops. And, you know, there's a lot of, like, with like I'm saying Jeff O'Neill's Industrial Arts.
Yeah, he calls it an XPA, extra pale ale. And the beer we're drinking right now is also called an extra American pale ale. This is a beer from Against the Grain. That's what it's called. Capital A space
A beer.
Beer. It's a beer. And they call it an American pale ale. It's 4.2%. It's really hoppy. It comes in a 16-ounce can, and it's really, really tasty. But it doesn't taste like hop water. It's got some real structure to it, I think.
And what's the difference? Is it the malt?
I think traditionally, typically, pale ale will have a stronger malt backbone. And I think also it might be a little more balanced with the hops, in fact, for sure. Oftentimes with the session IPAs, brewers use them to highlight a particular hop, which is, since there's not a lot of malt to get in the way, you get a really strong hop profile if you want to do a varietal.
So. I'm happy sitting there drinking beer with you guys. We haven't done a live show in a while. Did a lot of reposts and stuff. And then, James, for you, like, you know, let's look back at what, you know, pale ales are. You know, there's Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. It's kind of the granddaddy for many of us. You know, how are these new pale ales coming out? You can, and for all of you guys, this question, different from Sierra Nevada Pale Ale?
Yeah, I mean, I think Tony really just kind of hit the nail on the head. And I think if you look at just the evolution of the style, you know, from where it came from, obviously, you know, it's UK in origins. And so you did have a lot more balance, and just the way that the beer was structured and created, it really did kind of highlight the malts. Now, when the style was brought forth, you know, by Ken Grossman here in the United States, he decided to just take a chance on this very barbaric hop known as Cascade, something that brewers at the time really kind of found not the greatest hop to be using in beer. He kind of just kind of made it his own, which essentially became ours. And so where we are today in that lineage is that we see all these really great and interesting hop varietals are coming forth. Obviously, there's stuff that's coming out from, you know, just the southern hemisphere, you know, specifically you think about New Zealand and Australia. And it's really kind of showcasing different elements of what hops can do. I mean, I know, you know, you think about, you know, some of the tropical fruit flavors that come from, let's say, a Galaxy, you know, or maybe like some gooseberry from Nelson Sylvain. And so I guess where brewers are these days is they really want to showcase and kind of bring to light all these kind of different flavors that can come out in beer. And that's what we're seeing today.
Yeah, it's interesting because, as you said, when Sierra Nevada Pale Ale began, it was quite revolutionary. As you just mentioned, you're being out in the Yakima Valley. I mean, these hop growers are just producing new hop varieties like crazy these days.
Absolutely.
And the brewers get to experiment with them. I understand it takes, they start off with a number and, or with a, you know, like mm-hmm. hundreds of varieties, and they narrow it down to maybe, you know, like five that will progress, and they give them a number, and it takes 5 years till they actually give a new hop a name.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And I had a chance to try a lot of varietals. I mean, there was one that, to me, it was nothing but cantaloupe and watermelon, and that was just a really interesting kind of flavor profile that I've never experienced before in a hop. Conversely, you know, there's some other ones that are interesting as well. I mean, I tasted burnt rubber from a particular hop varietal too, which I'm sure there's going to be some application to that, you know, somewhere down the line.
Maybe a Ralk beer?
Perhaps. There we
How
go.
Are you tasting these, James? Do they brew like a pilot batch? Like, are you tasting some kind of extract, or like, what's the method for tasting?
I'm actually
hop varieties.
Yeah, I'm actually not tasting them. I'm sorry if I gave off that impression. I'm actually just experiencing
Just
like
smell.
To the nose.
Okay,
yeah, exactly.
I don't know if that's a thing, like hop teas or
sure, no,
like cupping with coffee or something.
Absolutely,
to, you know, be able to taste these.
So. Right. So it's fun times.
What was it like for you, Justin? I mean, I know last year you went to Idaho.
Yeah, I went to Anheuser-Busch has a big hop farm in Idaho. Went out there for a harvest and. Yeah, it was cool. I mean, they don't do a lot of the experimental varieties. They actually probably do zero. but they grew a lot of different hops, I think about 50 different types. And, yeah, we got to walk through and pick them and smell them. And it's really
It's a beautiful
quite
area.
Oh, yeah, it's gorgeous.
I was out there a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's 7 miles south of the Canadian border and just super, you know, beautiful and mountainous and gorgeous.
Tony, what do you look for when you? I mean, you've been doing this for how many years now? Ale Street News.
We're in our 25th year.
25 years. So,
fantastic.
What do you look for when you go to a hop farm?
Well, you know, you get to these guys. They pick the cones and then they start rubbing them and smelling them. It's like, you know, I can't even imagine a marijuana film before, but maybe it's similar.
It's the
lupulins. You know, if it's a good crop, that this is really the stickiness of the hop is quite.
The thing
key.
With weed, you can just smoke it right on site. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to wait for this beer to be produced.
Legal herb.
They want to pick them at the right time when they're really full, and then basically they dry them, and a lot of the hops these days, some people still use the whole leaf hops, but for a lot of growers, the idea is to dry them and get them into pelletized form as quick as possible to preserve all the aromas and goodness.
And James, what was it like up in Yakima?
It was quite impressive. Full disclosure, I've never been out to Germany. I've never seen the Czech Republic, you know, in this particular vein. So this is probably like the biggest yielding region that I've ever been in. Just to see the sheer number and the density of hop vines that were out there, and obviously, you know, just the processes that were involved in anywhere from, you know, picking to processing, you know, again, Tony's talking about pelletized form. And that was something like on that scale, which was quite impressive. So I really enjoyed that.
And just last week, our show, the On the Road with Beer Sessions Radio, up in the Albany County at Indian Latta Farm, said, who's a leader in New York State for growing hops, but even for them, it's small. It's maybe 1 or 2 acres of hops.
Right. I think the largest
they're
one
just
in
learning.
New York State is eight acres, and Yakima, I mean, it's just hundreds of acres.
Yeah.
The farm I was at was 1,700 acres, so a single farm.
So we were talking about, you know, session IPAs, but really I want to go beyond that to these new, like, I guess they're called extra pale ales.
Yeah, I've seen them called a few different things. Some places just call them IPAs. And you see an IPA that's 4%, and they don't bother putting the session on there. But
so why did you bring, brought the against the grain?
Yeah, I just picked this up the other day, and I really enjoyed it. And when you, you know, told me what we're going to be talking about today, that was the first beer that came to my mind. So,
we had one of the guys from that on the air via phone a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
and I've had a bunch of their beers at Jimmy's Number 43. But have you actually met those guys?
Yeah, they're characters to say the least. I mean, I think you can tell from their labels they like to have fun. They're based out of Louisville, Kentucky, and they have a barbecue restaurant and. They do some contract brewing for other places like Stillwater and a few other 12% beer breweries.
Yeah, they have one large format bottle with a chicken feathers.
Yeah,
yeah, stuff like that. Do you guys know them, Against the Grain?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I've come across them before. They're definitely doing some interesting stuff. I mean, Extra Pale Ale has been around for a while. Flying Fish Brewery in Jersey, that was one of their first beers that they made, just because, I guess, just to differentiate a little bit, you know, instead of the IPAs. It's definitely, you know, has maybe a higher attenuation, where it's a drier finish than, you know, some of the IPAs.
I'm going on a limb, because I saw, like, this all the session IPAs that I didn't like, but now I'm really liking the extra pale ales, the pale ales with a little more hops. So I think that's where we'll keep going with the show, right?
Sure.
I think so. I mean, I think for me, particularly, I like a session IPA. I don't like IPAs, but I can't really drink them, you know, continuously. It's like my palate just, like, is looking for some more malt, I guess.
Yeah, well, after one or two, you got to do something. I don't know if I'm looking for more malt, but less sweetness. Maybe less malt. Than
And dry finish, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, this is off to a great start here. It's our first fall session, Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes. All right. All right.
And this one's called Greenwood Cemetery by Teeth People. We'll be right back.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's our first show of September 2016. We're talking about Beyond Sessions IPAs and extra pale ales. We got Tony Forder, Ale Street News, James Ty at Beer Acolyte, and Justin Kennedy, everything. Steelers Beer, Beer Sessions.
Man of many hats.
And so Tony, we were talking sessions and all this stuff. So you brought us an English, is it a pale ale?
Yeah, it is a pale ale. It's from Sussex, England, where I'm actually originally from. Harvey's is the brewery of record in Lewes, England, Sussex, England.
They make the really great Christmas beer, right?
They do, yeah, which is exported over here.
Yeah.
They also make the Ale of Cock Devil Imperial Stout. But they make a lot of different things. They're a 200-year family brewery. And they work with a hop grower to develop a native hop from Sussex that grew wild in Sussex. And the hop grower
you know who it is?
Yes, I'm just going to put my spectacles on so I can read the label. But Hode is his name. And so he developed it into commercial crop, this native hop, and basically Harvey's cornered the crop, and they released it as wild hop ale last year. This year it's called Sussex Champion. It actually won a competition, which was run by hop growers, and it won first place.
Is it the hop variety, Champion?
No, it's not this.
Okay.
They just call it
because it won first place.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they just call it the Sussex Hop. They don't really have a name for it other than that, and it's proprietary to this A.H. Hoden son, who really brews exclusively for Harvey's now.
Yes.
So it's got an interesting character. I mean, it's not probably quite as alpha strong as a lot of American hops.
Yeah, I mean, I find it to be
pretty distinctly English, you know, in its origins.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I guess, Tony, the question to you is, you know, after getting back, you know, and seeing what's going on at the British Beer Festival, what do you see a trend in much in the same way that that's happening here in the United States, you know, with regards to the extra pale ales and everything that we're seeing, you know, that's very hot forward, you know, in the offerings?
Yeah, that definitely has been a trend over the last 10 years. The British brewers have really embraced American hops more, you know, for a while. But I think that trend has peaked a little bit. The winner of the Great British Beer Festival this year was a vanilla stout, which is quite unusual for the judges to pick a, you know, a non-pale ale, bitter sort of character category there. Because the cask-conditioned beer that you drink in England on the hand pumps is called bitter, a pint of bitter. That's really the draft version of a pale ale is what it is. So,
nice.
But it's got the caramelly taste, which is typically sort of English with the malt.
And, yeah.
But the hop does show through.
I mean, there's so many. That's why I want to talk about, like, you know, pale ales today, because it's like, summer's over. It's actually cool in New York, and I'm ready to drink real beer. You know, it's like it's been such a brutal summer for us. So this is a great. I think kicking off fall with talking about pale ales is the way to go.
I drank a lot of Shandy's this summer. They were great
and stuff, Radlers and things that don't really beer. You know, so this is cheers to real beer and to fall and English styles. We're talking about English styles of pale ales. What about like, I know even like guys at Casco Brewing in New York and some guys in the Hudson Valley, they're saying, oh, we want to make a New England style pale ale. What is that?
The New England style pale ale. Well, I know what a New England style IPA is, and that's typically something that's about 6 to 7, maybe 8% ABV, pretty cloudy, super aromatic, very, very little bitterness, maybe even zero IBUs. And meant to be consumed within, like, 2 weeks.
Like a Heady Topper from
Alchemist. Yeah, Heady Topper, or even, I think, Treehouse is the brewery right now in Massachusetts that really epitomizes that style. And they do it really well. It's just, you know, it's they sell it directly from the brewery. They don't really distribute, and that's their model, and that's kind of what they do. So.
And then you have Lawson's Sip of Sunshine.
Of course,
also.
Yeah.
It seems like sooner or later, as a brewer was explaining to me, a cloudy beer is going to clear. So, from my understanding, some of the brewers are using various tricks to keep it turbid.
I've talked to brewers, and they freely admit that they use like flour and other things to purposely cloud it up.
They don't just shake it up.
No. But you're right, Tony. I think everything settles after, you know, if you give it enough time, and they're cranking these things out, and
I don't know what the attraction is. It's just because it's got that fresh taste. That's what people want. You know?
It tastes like it almost tastes like orange juice, or, you know, like a creamsicle.
And the brewery in Philly, Hands.
Tired Hands. Yeah.
Tired Hands.
Yeah, they did the same thing.
Too,
yeah. I talked to Gene one time, and he was on the other podcast that I produce, and he said on the show that they use flour to make a lot of their beers hazy, and he is not ashamed of it at all. So.
Yeah. Is this like a hefty IPA?
Like a middle of the road. I would say middle of the road, like a double IPA, 8%, 7%, something like that.
You cross between a Hefeweizen and
I see. Yeah. Oh, I don't think they use flour in Hefeweizen.
No, they don't need to.
right.
Plenty of yeast.
Yeah.
But it is interesting, you know, you mentioned Treehouse, where, you know, suddenly a new brewery comes along and becomes a cult.
Yeah.
You know.
Happens a lot. And James, what about you? So jump in.
Yeah, no, I was going to comment that, I guess, again, along with, you know, just the lineage of what's happening, I think the idea with this particular substyle of beer is to really showcase the aromatics. I mean, because we all know that hops, you know, what hops really contribute to beer is both the bitterness, you know, and like the aroma and flavor. And the bitterness is pretty much stripped away, and we're talking about, like, in all of these aromatics that obviously transcend, you know, and just come through with the flavor. And I guess the intent with this is that, you know, these volatiles, they blow off really easily. So these beers are meant to be consumed almost immediately. And I mean, to Justin's point there, I guess the idea is to make it look like something that's completely different, something that you've never seen before, you know, in terms of beer.
I think everyone's always searching for new, and it's, you know, the IPA is not necessarily a new style by any means, but this way of making that IPA is very much of the moment right now, I think, and a very local part of, I think some people in Scandinavia and the UK are making these styles too, but it's mostly in the Northeast US right now.
No, I like seeing the experiments. Like I have on Undrafted, Jimmy's number 43 right now. It's Threes, made at Threes Brewery in Brooklyn with Interbar, which is a new brewery collaboration. Right. Yep. It's called Not Bad Beer.
Yep.
And the same kind of thing. It's cloudy. It's like an extra pale ale. But it's not too hoppy, but it's got that right. I feel like that's the flavor of the day. It's like cloudy, extra pale ale.
Seems to be. And a lot of these beers, they're really for tasting room beers. They don't often leave the brewery unless they go to Jimmy's number 43, perhaps. But, you know, people come to the tasting room and they don't have to travel far. You know, some of them are canned, I guess. The 16-ounce mm-hmm. cans is kind of the way to go with yep. those, I guess. But
And that's it's a short list of bars that actually are really lining up for the, like, you know, getting industrial arts in. With Jeff O'Neill or the latest Threes or the latest Interborough, you know, and just waiting for, you know, Dan up in Hudson Valley, Suarez Family Brewery.
Suarez, yeah,
he's
yeah.
only distributing to Queens and Brooklyn right now. So, you know, we're waiting for those kind of.
Oh, he's not in Manhattan right now.
He's not in Manhattan yet.
Huh, okay.
But I'm saying, so, you know, we're the kind of bars that are like lining up for this special stuff. And, yeah. You know, I think the customers want it too. But it's also at some point, how far ahead are your customers? Changing subjects, like, you know, new breweries. We should talk about that next. How far ahead do you get of your customers? Because there's so many new breweries coming on now, and I'm so excited about Industrial Arts and Threes and Suarez Family Brewery and Interboro. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that they're like a whole nother quality level. I don't know how you guys think about that. What's going to happen to the other breweries that have been around for a while?
I had a lot of Dan Suarez's beers this summer, and he's doing, I thought he was going to do all those, you know, the hazy IPA thing, but most of the beers that he was making were pilsners and lagers and, like, you know, hoppy, definitely yeah, hoppy, very
Hecto Pils was really great this
yeah,
summer.
Yeah, and a little cloudy. He uses some oats and other things that make the beer, you know, naturally hazy, but super crushable, you know, 4-5% beers that are just delicious and, you know, aren't traveling far.
But that's another trend, too. So it's not traveling far, super fresh, but also working with, like, oats and other grains.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I brought a sample here from my local brewery in Hackensack, New Jersey, Elementary, and they've been open less than a year. But they, too, are doing some really interesting lagers. They just released a Dortmunder that they age for 2 months in the tank.
Cool.
I actually got to name it when I went on tap, Knocking on Heaven's Dortmunder. So. but that's not the one I bought. I bought a pale ale from them that we'll probably try later.
Knocking on Heaven Dortmunder or Dortmunder?
Dort, yeah. Get yes. the T in there. Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't bring your flute today.
I did.
You did? All right. We'll get that ready because when we close out this segment, we, you know, we play it. Let's taste it. Let's taste the. So it's Elementary.
And Elementary.
And where are they in New Jersey?
They're in Hackensack, and the partners both have scientific backgrounds, and they really seem to be trying to make very true to style beers, which is a bit of a kind of a throwback to.
You know, I was lucky this summer talking about New Jersey beers. At WNYC, we did a little live series, and Michael from New Jersey Craft Beer recommended a few of the new breweries. So we tried the Flounder Brewing.
Yeah, Flounder is great.
And Angry Eric, and also Departed Souls.
Departed Souls, yeah, in Jersey City.
But he mentioned Elementary. It's the first time I'm trying it.
So what is this style?
So this is their pale ale. They have a kind of a one-off series called Sketchbook, and this is called Sketchbook 95. It's American pale ale. It's hopped with Chinook and Simcoe. It's 5.5%.
It's got a lot of like pine flavors.
Quite a lot of piney yeah. notes from the Chinook and from the mm-hmm. Simcoe. I guess.
What I meant to say is, nice. I know you do your show sometimes. Steal this beer in Jersey City.
Yep.
John Hall's from New Jersey, and Augie Carton's there.
They're both, yeah.
And then I know that you live in, Tony, you live in Jersey.
Yeah.
But we don't get to see that many Jersey beers.
Yeah, they don't come over to the city for some reason. I don't know why. Tony, why don't they come to us? We send
well,
beer to you guys.
A lot of these guys, they're small, and they're still, you know, a lot of them are self-distributed, so.
But they can't self-distribute to New York, I bet.
I think that's part of the problem, yeah. So, they have to sign up with a distributor. And the franchise law in New Jersey is a little scarier than the one in New York. I know of a brewer right now who's trying to switch distributors, and it's either pay an exorbitant amount of money or be out of the market in the area for a year. And Whereas I think New York is a little easier for a small brewer to change distributors.
So what I'm hearing, it's on us as New Yorkers to kind of jump across the river and start visiting these fantastic breweries.
Absolutely.
Yeah, or go to Barcade in Jersey City where we record the other beer. And you'll see a tap list that you do not recognize in New York City,
Jersey City,
one stop away.
It's definitely a great place to...
You could have a Barcade at a good beer bar in New Jersey. You could have an all-Jersey beer list.
I might as well plug a new bar that's opening this week in Hoboken, the Shepherd and the Knucklehead. They have a place... they have another place that's been open 15 years, but they're opening a new 60 tap bar in Hoboken.
Wow.
That will be an easy place to go find some New Jersey beers.
But not only Jersey beers, but also stuff like Great Lakes Brewing from Cleveland, Ohio, that we don't get in the city, and I think Lost Abbey,
for example, yes.
Yeah, all that stuff comes to Jersey, but not New York. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I know L Street News does have a New Jersey column, so that's I try to read that sometimes. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other breweries that you guys are liking a lot in Jersey right now?
I was just at yesterday, since the hurricane didn't show up, I decided to go take a look at the ocean.
Kind of screwed up your weekend plans, didn't it?
Asbury Park. Well, it was great. There was nobody down the shore, so went down to Asbury Park. There's it's called Dark City Brewery there. It's a small brewery that opened recently. That was fairly... impressed with. I think you mentioned Angry Eric before.
I read about a place called Magnify Brewing, which is...
Magnify is it's out by Cricket Hill in Passaic County. I've heard some pretty good things about them, and doing some quite adventurous beers.
Yeah.
But there's over 50 breweries now in New Jersey, so just like everywhere else, it's they're really popping up.
Great. So Tony, tell us one more time the beer that we're drinking.
This is it's called Sketchbook 95. It's an American Pale Ale from Elementary Brewery in Hackensack, New Jersey. As many tasting rooms are, they're open Thursday through Sunday. Like I said, they just released a Dortmund Ale Lager. They are going to host an Oktoberfest, I think, on October 1st and 2nd weekend, and they're holding back at least 3 lagers to be able to be
great, man. Tony, you got your flute with you?
I do.
Let's get it on. I'll just read something that Justin wrote. Justin made some great notes today, but we were talking about the session IPA category is often contentious. Some have argued that many session IPAs are simply American pale ales with IPA slapped on for marketing purposes. But a definition has slowly emerged that at least codifies somewhat how they're meant to differ. So we'll keep talking about that, because for me it's like, pale ale, session IPA. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And Tony, ready with a flute? This is our favorite flute player from Ale Street News. That's his job.
All right.
Flute player for Ale Street News. All right, so back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. Hey, summer's over, guys. All right.
And this one's called Youngblood by The Hollows. We'll be right back.
Hey, let's come back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, check it out, heritageradionetwork.org. It's another fall season. It's probably the seventh season, Heritage Radio Network. We've been on the air here 6.5 years, and there's a fundraiser coming up and a lot of cool things. So check it out, heritageradionetwork.org. Always a good time to become a member. So we got James Ty here with the other crew, Tony Forder, Justin Kennedy. So James, we're talking about pale ales, session IPAs,
right.
Hops.
Hops.
What do you want to tell us something?
It's just...
What do you want to tell us something, baby? Come on.
I don't know. I mean...
We started the show. Originally, the show was like, oh, we're talking about hops. And then I booked James. And then kept coming around. But
nice. No, I think just part of it, and Jimmy, we've talked about it before, but just the idea of just
I mean, what I just did, you know, go and visit Yakima. I think that's kind of like the exciting piece right now that I want to see more of, you know, is just the beer tourism aspect, but getting out there, you know, just kind of learning the raw materials, seeing where your beer is coming from. And I do definitely see that as kind of like coming around the corner. And I'm really excited, you know, when you know, these kind of like, you know, hop-based events come about, because that's something that I really want to get there and really understand, you know, how these, like, precious, you know, like commodities are being cultivated and taken care of, and everything that's I guess surrounding that. So,
James, can casual travelers visit the hop farms, or how restrictive are they with letting visitors into? See what they're doing.
Yeah, it's always good to know somebody.
Yeah,
you know, and so that's something that would definitely go a long way. But at the same time, you know, if you reach out to many of them, you know, when the timing is right, I wouldn't necessarily say now is always the best time, given that they're probably really in the thick of things.
Harvest is not a good time to visit.
No, yeah. No, no, no.
Or to ask to visit.
Right, right.
And so some of the hop growers understand. You know, you'll have to buy or contract for a minimum amount of a certain type of hop if you want it. But there are other growers that really do cater to the smaller brewers.
Smaller, yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and absolutely. They might be more willing to allow visitors.
Yeah, these guys from Elementary were just out there as well, along with Brick City, which is also near in Bergen County.
That's what's fun with a lot of the new New York State. And it seems like many states, North Carolina, mm-hmm. a lot of states that have a good beer scene also have farmers growing hops. Is that happening in North Carolina?
A little bit. I think it's a little too warm down there to grow many good varieties. But, yeah, certainly in, I think, New York State's coming up. Michigan is a huge hop-growing facility, or hop-growing state. Our friend Travis from Folks Beer has a little hop farm out there at his parents' place, which I've been meaning to get to the last few years, but yes. Haven't been able to go. Mostly I think Pacific Northwest is by far the largest region.
Yeah. If you'd actually draw that band across the world, you know, in terms of latitude, you look at Washington State, you look at Michigan, you look at Kent, you know, you look at, you know, just the hop growing regions like in Hallertau, Germany.
Yeah. Yep.
They're all right in that same band. So
48th parallel, is it?
Yeah, something like that.
It's kind of just above the great wine growing regions, too. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. Well, let's talk about beer. So, because sometimes the biggest thing for me is, by having a beer bar in New York City, I get to try all the new beers, and I'm pretty confident I know the brewers. I know maybe the styles are different. But when I go on vacation and I have to go to like a bottle shop or a liquor store, I always take a risk. And I was just in Cape May, New Jersey, and I was trying some of the Cape May Brewing beers that I liked, their IPA. And but I ended up going back to like a standby Sierra Nevada Torpedo IPA, buying in cans. When I'm on vacation, because I don't want to be disappointed. So I understand what it's like being, you know, a working person and having to actually buy your beer, not get it for free. Let's talk about this one. So it's Trogues. This is the Hop Knife. True. This is a funny style. It's like 6.2% high IBU, but it's not an IPA.
They call it a pale ale.
They call it a pale ale, even though it's 87 IBU. So, you know.
Yeah, I wonder what is the reason and thinking behind that, Trogues?
Yeah, like, so what I'm wondering is, I like this beer, but I'm wondering, you know, are we fooling ourselves? Like, why aren't we just making more good IPAs? Like, I like the Trogues Perpetual IPA a lot.
Yeah.
That's a good solid.
Very good.
Again, if I was in a package store and I thought it was fresh, I would buy it. Why would I, as a consumer, want to buy a session IPA instead of just like a Pils or something else? Does everybody answer that question?
Well,
that's the big question.
I mean,
and why is the market, why are like, people buying them?
You like hops and, you know, like Founders came out with All Day IPA. So the idea is, yeah, you can start drinking earlier. One of the ideas.
And it also kind of signals that you can drink a lot of it throughout the day. You know, we've all had the days where you start drinking maybe around 11 o'clock and you don't stop until after midnight. And
plus, you know, they sell on a 30 pack, don't they?
Or it is a 15 pack.
15 pack, not a 30 pack.
There might be a 30 pack. I don't know.
Josh Bernstein on, because Josh, too, you know, like I said,
he's going to be on in 2 weeks.
I am a little spoiled. When you own a beer bar, you're a beer buyer. You know, you really do get your beer, whether the place you're working at.
Right.
I don't usually go out and buy beer. When I go and buy beer, I'm always like, it's always eye opening. I'm like, wow, what are my choices? What am I spending my money on? I'm much pickier buying beer in a bottle shop than I am when I'm at a bar. So,
yeah, it's I was just at a store in Jersey take some pictures. We're going to redo their ad paper. And it was just before the Labor Day weekend, and they had Florida space, fridges. I mean, the choice was just so overwhelming that I just wonder, you know, somebody getting into the craft beer right now, like, where do you start? How do you, you know, it's almost overwhelming.
Yeah, that's a question I get from a lot of friends who are just casually into beer, not even into beer, but trying to get into it. And I don't know. Like, a lot of times I don't even know where to start when I go into a store. And I shop for beer fairly often. You know, I get a lot of free samples being a writer, but I definitely shop at least once or twice a week.
A good beer bar with a nice curated list, you're willing to try things, let you taste it. But yeah, if you're going and even buying a 12-pack or something, you feel like you're committed.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. You know, you're committing yourself to that purchase. Whereas, you know, if you go to a bar, you know, it's one round. I'm with a friend. You know, we can just, you know, while this pint away, you know, and I can reset and, you know, go with another one. Whereas the store does get a little bit paralyzing. Yeah. You know,
one of the better things in New York, anyway, is the bodegas will even do single beers, so you can pick. You know, you can do a mixed 6-pack at my local bodega of like some really good stuff, and that's what I do a lot of the times. I'll pick like when I bought this beer originally, the Against the Grain. I bought one can, and I was like, oh, I'm not gonna buy four of those, so I don't even know if I'm going to like it. But
I mean, that's the great thing about tasting rooms too, and also you can do that on vacations. Go check out the local brewery,
right?
And then you can, you know, get your samplers, try them, and then get another growler if you don't have enough.
Whatever
growlers
you like the best, you can
go to the source. Yeah, and the other thing, I mean, since we're talking about end, is, you know, you go to a liquor or a package store. The first thing I ask what's moving too, because you just don't know from store to store, region to region. You know what is moving.
And those, yeah, and if something's been sitting there for 3 months, you're not going to want to drink it. I mean, that could be the problem. That could be the reason it's not moving. That's kind of an existential thing. But
yeah, but that's, you know, that's another thing to consider as people are talking about their growth or craft beer. And, but for you, James, as, you know, beer educated and everything, do you have to deal with that stuff? I mean, you'd ever have to go into a package store and give a training or talk to a liquor store owner?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that happens, you know, very often. But I'll say, like, from my perspective, I'll even say, you know, I'll be humble enough to say that I cannot keep up with just the, I don't know if there's anybody that can keep up with, you know, just the exponential rate of breweries that are coming up. So, and what is it now? Like, you know, on average about two a day that are opening?
There's like 4,600 now. And I don't even know what the rate is. Yeah, I think it's two a day.
So 4,700. It will be 5,000 sometime.
46 last
next year.
Yeah, it's so it's mind boggling.
Some people predict, I think Jim Cook, I heard him say 10,000 breweries, you know, would be possible.
In like 2 years or something? Mm-hmm.
In two years, yeah. Yeah, that's crazy.
But a lot of those breweries, as we mentioned, they're not in the retail chains. You know, they just do a lot of, well, on draft they may be. But
it's nice going to a small brewery like Strong Rope in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It's pretty much an on-premise. You go there and you can buy
pints. Yeah, they don't really sell anywhere else. They just sell all their beer right there.
A few bars and that's it, you know.
Yeah.
Let's do some fun. This is fun. This is our first live show in a while, getting our chops back. Last year I had some goofy questions. So Tony, you know, when you're playing flute on the air on Beer Sessions Radio, what beer would you most like to drink while you're playing flute? Or can you drink and play flute at the same time?
I have not actually attempted that. Maybe you could funnel some beer in down through the flute. I don't know, but I think it would be...
There's a scene from an 80s movie where they drink through a flute.
A little bit tricky, but, you know, again, it depends on what I'm playing, time of day. Something lively would be, you know, like pale ale along the lines we're doing now, you know, an IPA or, you know, and then going to the darker styles like an Imperial Stout would be a little bit more somber. I do these talks sometimes, like at the Mondial for Beer, where I interpret a beer with some poetry and some flute. So it does sort of vary on the inspiration.
Cool, man. All right. Mm-hmm. Justin, so in a couple of weeks, we're going to go up to Boston for the, which is funny, Copenhagen Beer Conference in Boston.
Copenhagen Beer Celebration in Boston.
Oh, that's a celebration. Copenhagen. That's why I couldn't find it on Google. Come on.
How's your Danish?
Terrible.
I don't mean the pastry.
But what are some of the brewers that you're looking forward to meeting and tasting?
18th Street from right outside of Chicago in Indiana. They're going to be there. Fonta Flora from North Carolina will be there. Who else? Hill Farmstead, of course. We get a lot of their stuff here now, but I'm sure they'll have some special stuff. Yeah, I don't know. There's going to be a lot of really, really great breweries. Those are three that I would be super interested in.
You know, one thing I want to give a shout out. You said Hill Farmstead. There's a great listener. His name's Tim Sansone. He just sold his bar up by Binghamton, and 2 weeks ago he was in New York for like the Beer Sessions radio tour. He said he came to Roberta's, he had Hill Farm, said he came to Jimmy Summit 43, went to Blind Tiger, and just we're talking about beer bar pioneers. Big shout out to Tim Sansone, a great beer. The beer bar up in Binghamton, New York. But there's a lot of great guys out there, pioneers. And James Ty, so for you.
Yes.
You know, you went to Yakima. This was supposed to be the hop show.
Right.
What would be a couple new hops that you'd like to see in more beers?
Gosh, that's... I would love to see the hops that I've yet to experience. You know, the ones that are in the pipeline, the ones that are being bred as we speak. You know, that's what I'm most interested in seeing. Because if what's happened thus far is any indication, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more great beers to become down the pipeline.
And is there a new beer that you've had recently that is made with a new hop or new hops that are out there that you like a lot?
No. I'm sorry.
Nothing.
I love the New Zealand hops, the Motueka and the Nelson Sauvin, and all the other 14 varieties that they grow.
It's only from Ailsford News.
I actually did get some insights into some of the new hop varieties. In the last issue, I did talking to one of the guys from Hopsteiner, and he just described a couple of three new hops. They have numbers, and one he described as creamsicle, orange and vanilla. Another one, berries, strawberries, raspberries, and then. Another one, he said, the craziest hop I've ever seen, orange, chocolate, and coconut. We think it'll be great for porters and stouts.
That's great, man.
I would agree.
And some shout-outs as we wrap up. Events coming up. It's fall Pig Island. 7th Annual Pig Island is this Saturday, September 10th, pigisland.com. It's our special event supporting New York State Farmers, Taste New York, and Six Point Beer. Also, Justin and I will be at the Copenhagen Beer Celebration.
Yes, sir.
Boston. Massachusetts.
September 23rd and 24th.
Check that out. And of note, Heritage Radio Network listeners and fans, you can join us on Sunday, September 25th at 4 p.m., the Fall 2016 season launch party. Most of the Heritage Radio Network hosts will be there. It'll be at La Piccio, great restaurant in the East Village. So check it out on heritageradionetwork.org. So thanks for joining us, producer Justin Kennedy, Maggie on Twitter, David Tadashore, an engineer, and we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah.
All right.
Woo, woo.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.